The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
On with Mario Lopez.
You're on Mario Lopez. Joining me now on Zoom from the office, actor Brian Baumgartner. Welcome back to the show, man. Nice to see you.
Mario, it's great to see you.
Now, you were supposed to do this with Ben Silverman, one of the producers of the show, who is also doing the podcast with you, correct?
That's right. So, go ahead.
No, I'm saying, so is this basically how the podcast is going to work? Sometimes you'll get Ben, sometimes you won't. You'll consistently get Brian.
You'll consistently get me, yes. I show up every day, as I have for 15 years. But yes, occasionally he'll pop in. Now, he had the idea and went to Spotify about, you know, there's been a lot talked about, written about The Office. And he wanted us to tell our story. And so he approached me about partnering with him and executive producing with him, an oral history of The Office. So going back and when he asked me to partner, I was like, well, I don't know. I started thinking about, we haven't filmed the show in 7 years. The last scene that we filmed was 7 years ago. Yet today, it is the most watched show in television.
Isn't that amazing?
7 years after we finished. And so I just had this idea and wanted to explore why. Like, why is this show still resonating? And specifically, why are 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 13? Like, why is this new audience coming in, and why is it cool? And why am I in a Billie Eilish song, Mark? Right. None of this makes any...
You know, I saw my 15-year-old nephew with an Office t-shirt the other day. I'm like, how? What? I don't, and he loves it, and he was going on and on. But you're right, it's incredibly fascinating, and God bless streaming, huh? For that.
Right.
But why do you think that is? Have you had to sum it up?
Well, I mean, we come up with a bunch of theories, and I go back and I talk to everyone. I assembled over 100 hours of personal interviews. So and talk to everybody. I mean, Steve Carell, who hasn't really talked about the show since he left 9 years ago, sat down with me for a number of hours and we talked about it. And I think there's a lot of reasons. One that never really occurred to me, specifically about why it's attracted to young kids. When we were on, right, and we were struggling. That's the other thing. We tell the story like that we were almost dead after six episodes. And then after 12, we were definitely dead. I mean, Angela Kinsey tells a story of taking the nameplate off of her trailer because it was we were done. And we there was an idea. I don't remember the number, but it was like, oh, if there are 200 million people who work in offices in the United States. So if a little percentage of them like the show, then we're set. But I think what we didn't realize was the attraction of the show to young people. And I think one of the reasons is that The Office is a mirror in some ways to the experience of school. You're sitting in class. Right. You have an unreasonable boss slash teacher that sure. makes you do unreasonable things at times, rules that don't make any sense. You're sitting next to people that you don't choose who, you know, in a lot of cases, sure. who you sit next to. And as you progress through school year after year, it's the same people with the, you know, the crush between the cool kids and the weird creed in the corner. And, you know, I mean, so there's an archetype of character that mirrors, I think, the school experience, being stuck together in a place that makes, you don't have any choice about.
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. And it's genuinely funny, which I think helps. Do you think, though, Brian, you could make The Office today with as PC as we've become? You think that has a lot to do with it too? That, you know, it was just not that long ago where you could kind of flex those comedy muscles a little bit more. And now a lot of that stuff probably wouldn't fly. Unfortunately,
I think it's tough. I mean, it's a weird, very difficult and confusing time. I go back to a moment that to me is like quintessential The Office, and you have Michael Scott, and he turns around a chair in the conference room, and he's leaning over the back and he's looking very, he genuinely cares. And he's talking to Oscar, and he says to Oscar, what's something less offensive to call you than Mexican? And Oscar says that there's nothing offensive about Mexican. Michael says, yeah. But what's something less offensive to call you than Mexican? And this is something you cannot say wrong on
now. Hold on,
level.
No, it's I'm Mexican, and I think it's funny,
right?
And I think it's funny, and right. it's and it should still remain that. But I get your point. That I right. think it's the absurdity that. But go on, let me go ahead.
No, but to me the takeaway is, in that same moment, you have 15 other people in the room. And what the other 15 people in the room are saying, and the expression on their face or their size or whatever, is like, this is wrong. Like, this is not an appropriate thing for you to say. You are misguided. You are not woke.
But
sure.
Therein lies the comedy, wouldn't you say?
That is what I think. And see, so for me, the overall message of The Office is incredibly progressive. And what we're talking about is incredibly progressive. And I personally don't understand why that can't be shown. I mean, this is an amazing example. As we went through, right, we're at NBC Universal. You understand this experience. And, you know, we had to every year have a sexual harassment seminar, mm-hmm. right? And they would come to the set and we would around.
Mario's had three this year.
Yeah, well, that's not surprising. But we would sit around and they would, you know, the HR people from NBC Universal would give their talk. And then they would have videos for us, right, to entertain it. Right. And the videos they would show were from our show about what not to do. Right? but the point was, when we were doing those scenes, we were aware.
Of course,
this is not what you're supposed. This is not okay.
It's acting. It's comedy.
It's not okay to bring in a sex doll during sexual harassment. This is not something that is okay.
Right.
But unfortunately, I think there's just a narrow view where you can't say the words, and there are some words you shouldn't say, but there that you can't even make the point. When I think what's missing is the larger context is so much more important.
I agree. Absolutely agree.
You know, it's interesting because it is so popular. I think that it could air today. I just don't know that anyone would buy the show today, like to air it. Like no one would pick the show up and air it if it were brand new because it seems offensive, but It clearly still works.
I think the bigger problem would be that the jokes would, even if it was picked up, a lot of the jokes would get censored by standard practice. I mean,
But I think it proves, not to cut you off, the massive success it's having now is that people appreciate that type of humor, and it's just the vocal, loud minority that's making noise.
Right.
That would like want
people
to
understand
discourage
that it's humor.
Of course. Yeah. Of course they do. Hey, you mentioned, Brian, that you guys were almost dead in the water after 12 episodes, correct? Who was your flag carrier that wanted to keep it on the air? Who do you credit for, and why did it continue to stay on the air then?
There's no question, and we talk about this in the podcast, and I sit down with Kevin Riley, who was the chairman of NBC at the time, and he risked everything, and he at one point tells me, I knew I was going to be fired. There was a great chance I was going to be fired at any moment, but he believed so much in the show. And we have a picture. I have it in my office, actually, that when we won the Emmy after the second year and we were backstage at the Emmys and, you know, everybody's holding their trophies and we're having the pictures, a bunch of us picked up Kevin Riley above our heads and held him there for the pictures. And I have the picture in my office still, because there's no question, if it weren't for the courage of him, that we would not be on. And the next episode that comes out on Tuesday talks about the second season and how difficult it was. And it's true. It's what do they say? It sounds like a movie. Like, it can't possibly be true. But throughout the second season, all of these things that happen, from 40-year-old virgin making Steve Carell a major star, to the first ever video iPod coming out and The Office debuting number one on that, to all of these successes that happen piece by piece by piece by piece, that at the end of the second season, us winning the Emmy and us realizing that we were going to be around for a while, is truly a story that you don't get if you're streaming it on Netflix. Yeah. You don't remember the history or understand. And what I think is going to be fun for people is hearing the story, going back in and then being able to watch the show. Not that I'm advocating for people having to watch it again, but you will see shifts that happen within the show.
Yeah.
You'll see how specific characters were changed and how storylines were adapted that continued the growth and build of the show.
Kevin Riley's an awesome guy. So that's cool to hear. Now, when you break down each episode, is it chronologically or do you bounce around?
It's generally chronologically. I mean, I've been saying, like, oral histories, right, have existed since pre-writing, like, right, cavemen or whatever. Like, you're telling the history of something that's happened. So we do start at the beginning, but we then we break out of that structure a little bit. And we'll talk about the writer's room and specifically the impact of our specific writer's room that birthed now, like, the greatest television producers and writers that exist today, that came from also total, you know, they were totally unknown entities before this time. And talk about the writer's strike that happened in 2008, which was right in the middle of our run.
That's right.
That The Office had a huge impact to cause that writer's strike in a lot of ways when we were producing online video content and not getting paid for it for the first time. Now the idea that anything that happens on the internet is free. Yeah. Well, you wouldn't like that so much. And so, yeah, we do sort of break out and look at those things. And then obviously spend a lot of time with Steve, you know, his decision to leave and how that impacted the show and ultimately, you know, how we decided to end it.
You mentioned Billie Eilish earlier, who's a huge fan. She actually is one of your guests too, right?
She does come in and talk to me a little bit, because to me, it's just so fascinating when we talk about the young people. I mean, that's her, right? I mean, and she's watched it 14 times or whatever. And she talked a lot about that it brings her comfort, that there is, and I think the show does that. There's a nostalgia. There's something about the theme song playing, that the repetition of that, these people that, you know, not to reference a different show, but like Cheers, right? It's sure. Like sometimes, what is it? Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name.
Exactly.
There's like a familiarity with these characters. And I think a lot of people find anyway that when you watch it again, you discover new things that happen in it again. So to me, it was just fascinating to talk with her and her decision to write a song and for my voice to be in it. I mean, it's just sort of so crazy.
It's so crazy. And real quick, I hear you're working on a new comedy for the Zoom era. What's that about?
A new comedy for the Zoom era? What am I working on?
Is that a rumor that's floating around there? It sounds good. Or maybe we're just
doing... No. That Ben is doing that.
Oh, that was Ben.
We would have that answer if Ben had
showed
up.
We would have that answer if Ben had showed up, that rat bastard.
Yes, he's working with another with another one of my old coworkers on that. Yes, he is. And I was like, oh my God, are you talking? I don't know what you're talking about. I will tell you this. I did do Jason Reitman, the Princess Bride thing. Have you checked that out at all?
Oh, I'm familiar with that. I haven't checked it out.
Quibi, I haven't seen that yet. You're in it, so you'll probably say it's good. But is it good?
I did do that. It was crazy. So that the idea of that was Jason Reitman shooting a frame-by-frame remake of a Princess Bride with he sent me an email. I think there were 90 actors who all filmed it on their own.
Oh my gosh.
On iPhones during quarantine using props and costumes around the house.
Oh.
So I will, spoiler alert, I was the great Andre the Giant.
Yes. Big shoes to fill.
But it was like we were all playing the parts just for like a scene and actually his idea was he brought from the office myself and Oscar Nunez and Angela Kinsey as Fezzik and
he
Wallace
got
John and
so the accounting department
the accounting department on Cliffs of Insanity remaking a Princess Bride. There's the pitch
That's fantastic. All right, listen, before I let you go, I'm gonna put you on the spot. Quick questions, quick answers. All right.
Okay.
All right, here we go. Dream podcast guest.
Steve Carell.
Favorite show you've watched during quarantine?
Ooh. Shoot. I know. I have one. I don't know how I missed it. I don't understand, but Schitt's Creek is really funny. Have you seen Schitt's Creek?
Yes. I haven't, but I hear nothing but great things about it. It's funny, right?
I don't know why I missed it, but yes, that's it.
Celebrity crush growing up.
Tiffany Amber Thiessen.
Good taste.
Yeah.
Best chili you've ever had.
Mine.
And what's something you've learned in 2020?
Man, enjoy and appreciate life as much as you can every freaking day.
That's some solid advice right there. Brian, nice catching up with you, man. Thanks so much for taking the time and congrats on the podcast. That sounds awesome.
Thank you so much, Mario. Great to talk to you.
An Oral History of the Office podcast available now. Thank you so much for your time, sir. Take care.
All right. Talk to you later.
On with Mario Lopez.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.